Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 15th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Omer Sitar, the co-founder and executive vice president of Sightline Payments, about how the current COVID-19 crisis could pave the way for cashless payments coming to the casino floor. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the affiliate marketing site players trust when deciding where to gamble online. For information on how your online or social casino, sportsbook, or poker room can get involved, visit iGamingPlayer.com. Cash is king, but the actual bills that make up real cash are more germ spreaders than money royalties. Omer Sitar and his payment company, Sightline, have developed procedures over the past several years to migrate cash money to and from the casino floor via electronic financial transfers. The process will eliminate the nasty cash from the hands of customers and employees alike and encourage safer and healthier transactions. Sitar says these kind of transactions bring other benefits to the customers, operators, and regulators that will make the entire gaming experience a more satisfying and transparent event. He spoke with me from his home in Las Vegas in early May. Omer Sitar, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's good to get together with you, not in person, but close enough. We're over the phone in the same city, so we're social distancing.
thank you, Roger, as always, for having us, and really happy to know that that GGB is a strong voice for us in the industry during this time, and that you are alive, safe, and well.
Great. Well, you know, one of the things we're doing is identifying things that might change in the industry. And while we've identified cashless gaming as probably the next big thing after sports betting, you know, this whole current crisis has really sped it up. You know, no one wants to be handling money anymore, you know, which studies have shown carry all kinds of germs. So tell us what your research has shown about cash bills and the germs that they spread.
Yeah, you know, it's a super interesting time. I mean, obviously, the industry has been talking about it and positioning this for a long time, and we've all felt that this was coming. Needless to say, the AGA under the leadership of Bill Miller and a number of the large operators started working on this about 18 months ago, and COVID-19, what's happened, just seems to be accelerating that pace, as it would make sense. So, a few things that are interesting on the cash side. You know, for those people who are not payment geeks and cash geeks, you know, there are entire countries that are looking at what to do with cash. Cash is, if you think about it, and we never used to think about it this way, but, you know, a treasury in a country in the U.S. or whatever country that is prints a bill, and then that bill circulates for years and years, if not decades, back to the government facility. And, you know, so it trades hands so many times, and there are research studies that have been shown over the years done by the CDC that up to 3,000 kinds of germs live in paper currency. So countries like India are in fact buying back billions of bills out of the ecosystem, sanitizing them and repumping them back in, into the economy. And we've had Governor Sisolak here in Nevada make, you know, as part of a directive, encourage people to not use paper as much as possible and not use paper currency as much as possible. But as you know, in gaming, you know, when you want to play a slot machine or a table game, everything is based around paper, whether it's slots or Tito. And so there really is a public health and safety concern. Other companies have seen this in their numbers recently as well. They're publicly available. You could look up numbers from Visa or MasterCard. Their global contactless volume is growing by double, in some cases, triple digits. The likes of Target just came out with their numbers last week. Their April digital sales were up 275%, and So lots and lots of movement taking place on thinking about how we move away from cash. The good news of the gaming side is if we were starting today, we would still be years away from implementing an ecosystem that worked. The good news is we all collectively started a few years ago. So gaming is now in a position where I think we will start seeing a transition take place. Sometime during the course of this year, you will see operators, we believe, both commercial and tribal, in multiple jurisdictions, up and running casinos where the patron is doing all the connectivity through their own device. So bring your own device on your own mobile phone, connecting that both into slot devices and table games. So definitely some positive movement taking place.
Absolutely. That's exciting. So we're looking at... probably, I guess, the biggest hurdle we've had in gaming industry has been the regulators. They don't really want to have anything to do with even coming close to a credit card gambling system. And, and obviously this isn't, gambling off your credit card, but it's still gambling off a card. How are we going to convince them that this is a safe and secure system?
That's a really interesting question. So, we're not just payment geeks. We're history buffs when it comes to payments. So without getting too much into the history, but if you look at the origin of the first payment network, the Visa, the MasterCard, the first credit card actually in the world was really what became Diners Club. They started coming out about in the early 1950s, Roger. So there's a 70-year history in the world of what became electronic payments. Prior to that, it was all check and cash. Well, there's one fundamental overarching theme in all of those payments in that 70-year history. We all keep our money at a bank or we have a line of credit someplace, and then we all want to do something. We want to eat something. We want to go somewhere. We want to buy something. So basically, we're paying for goods and services. Well, that overarching arc over that 70-year time frame is how to do that quicker and faster. Right. How can I get my money quicker from where it's sitting at to what it is that I want to pay for? Now, the most recent examples of those in the last few years are everything from WeWork, Airbnb, Uber, Lyft, all of those things where payments have become completely seamless. Now, gaming has a unique challenge, which is a twofold challenge. And it's a completely justified regulatory challenge. We completely get it. But that real challenge in gaming is one not just of potential money laundering, but also responsible gaming and problem gaming. And that's a challenge that doesn't exist in our everyday lives. So, if you're paying for an Uber ride, no one's going to accuse you of being irresponsible for paying an Uber ride that is completely seamless. But if you have money moving from your credit card or your checking account completely seamlessly into the slot machine, well, that is a big problem. There's a great deal of work that is being done by the slot system providers, by IGT, Cygames, Aristocrat, Konami, in helping create this ecosystem, which effectively becomes a stored value ecosystem where some kind of an account gets pre-funded, and then you want to create as many ways as possible to fund that. And then that account is the consumer account, which is tied to the casino systems, that moves money in and out of a game. And that, for us in gaming, is critical. So whereas we want to make it as seamless and quick and as easy as possible, we also want to be very cognizant of those kind of nuances of gaming that doesn't apply to the rest of the world. And I think the regulators are starting to understand that. I think the regulators are really taking a deep dive. There have been discussions taking place with regulatory bodies around the country that are understanding what the payments technology is and that, what is the distinction between stored value and prepaid and credit and how more real-time payments are coming. I'll give you one more example around that. The federal government has been working for a number of years on a real-time payments initiative. So today, unfortunately, a lot of our banking infrastructure is very antiquated. But so when I send money to Roger, the rails that are used for that, there's a whole process, but it's a delayed process. Well, the federal government has been investing in this infrastructure for banks to upgrade it, where I can actually send money in real time or close to real time from myself to Roger directly from my bank account. Well, there's going to be real implications of that as we bring it to gaming, whereas in our everyday lives, that's great, right? I want to send you money, I can send you money, and you'll have it in the next 60 seconds here. But do you really want to tie someone's checking account directly to a slot machine and have money, drawn out of there in 60 seconds? The odds are you probably don't want to do that, and regulators don't want to do that, and from an RG standpoint, that's not the right thing to do. So we have to be cognizant of those new technologies coming as well, and the regulators are taking a lot of time to understand not just what's happening, of what is coming. So all of that is encouraging too.
Right. So really, what is coming? I mean, we're talking about you were just talking about Uber, and you know, I have my credit card linked to my Uber account, so the money comes off of my credit card. Obviously, that can't happen in gaming. What other step has to be implemented there for you to have an account at a casino and to put money in there, but still respecting the RG component of the whole system there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let's into the nuts and bolts of what does that consumer experience look like. So most likely, and obviously no one's truly really done this yet, so you know we'll see how the model evolves, but most likely this is how we see it happening. And in the dozens of discussions we're having with commercial and tribal operators and regulators, this is kind of the consensus we see coming through. And a customer is going to have a mobile app, right? So you want to do everything as much as possible in your mobile app. The customer's That is the casino's mobile app. And that casino's mobile app might be made by a third party, or it might be made by their slot system provider. It doesn't really matter. And that mobile app is going to be tied into the casino management system. So it's tied into your casino loyalty account. For most of these cases, or for many of these cases, we believe that the casino is going to loyalty account before you can do these electronic payments. And that's going to be important for a number of reasons from an AML standpoint and other such standpoints. So you're likely going to have a casino loyalty account. To this casino loyalty account, you're going to tie what I mentioned, generically we call stored value. All stored value really means, Roger, is an account that is a pre-funded account. And that account might be housed with a financial institution. That account might be housed with a casino. And it's a ledger balance that is keeping track of the patron's money. And in this pre-funded account, you have tied different ways of funding this account. It could be, in certain cases, a credit card. It could be a debit card. It could be your bank account. And it could also be PayPal. It could be, theoretically, Venmo or Zelle, all these different kind of payment methodologies that we're used to using. And now, the beauty of the pre-funded account is that becomes a check and balance for the gaming regulator, because that pre-funded account can now be licensed, the company that provides that pre-funded account. And that pre-funded account can have velocity thresholds in it. It can have limits controlled around it to say you can either fund a certain amount of money or so often, or have time delays built into it. That becomes the key control mechanism for the gaming regulatory body. That pre-funded account is now tied into, because it's already tied to the CMS, it's now tied to the slot system, it's tied to some mechanism at table games where you can move money from that pre-funded account to table games, and any other system that the casino theoretically has, including retail and dining and nightlife and all of those different items. So the consumer experience really becomes similar to Uber, but with the nuance of gaming, where it's not just your credit card, you're using that account to fund this pre-funded account and then move money consciously into some kind of gaming system. But what's being developed is the consumer will be able to walk up to a slot machine, use the pre-funded account to tap the phone or card into that slot machine and move money into the credit meter, or walk up to a table and using some kind of connectivity mechanism, move money from that pre-funded account and purchase chips right at the table. So now you have completely eliminated cash from the ecosystem, unless, of course, the consumer really wants it, which we think most people are not going to want it. So that's what that experience looks like.
I see. Okay. Now, will the player have the option to do any limits or no limits in terms of the money they put into that pre-funded account?
I think there should be limits. We are big proponents. Now, here's the beauty of electronic payments. You know, very similar to taking out cash, the consumer has this perception. You know, I've got $200 of cash in my pocket. When I'm out of that cash, I'm only going to take out 100 more. Well, you could do the same thing in these pre-funded accounts, right? The consumer can set a limit and say, all right, I want to set a limit that restricts me to $200 a day or $200 a week. Or $1,000 an hour, right? Because it's so configurable, it's electronic. So theoretically, every consumer can set it entirely their own limits based on their own budget. Now, there is a very important component, and this, you know, even irrespective of pre-COVID, the industry has started talking about, the more digital we're going, and we are all going digital, I mean, we've all seen what's happened with sports and the rise of sports throughout the country, as we all go all digital. there have to be these responsible gaming tools that are built right into the infrastructure on the mobile and digital side, where people can block themselves, their real-time self-exclusions, not delayed self-exclusions. So there's more work to be done there, and we think that's going to be coming. But it is important for the player to have the option to say, I feel comfortable or I don't feel comfortable. And the beauty of doing this electronically is in those jurisdictions that already have digital sports or online gaming. So if you take a really progressive jurisdiction like New Jersey or Pennsylvania, Nevada, which has poker, obviously, and sports as well, you know, from a patron standpoint, it creates a great deal of convenience because that same consumer account, which I'm using at slots and at tables, is the same account that I can use for sports or the same account that I can use for online. And so that's what we call in the world of payments omnichannel. Omnichannel is if the patron's money under a controlled environment, they can use it to do whatever they want to do. And that creates a real tie for the consumer between the digital world and the brick-and-mortar world. So even now, you know, you're going to see this cross-movement of money going back and forth between digital and brick-and-mortar and making it very easy for the consumer to do that, or at least convenient for the consumer to do that.
Okay. So there's been a ban in England on credit card wagering. I didn't even know that existed, but is that going to impact this at all?
Yeah, I think we have lots of lessons to learn. You know, and it's not just England, it's the European market. They grew an online business and a digital business and a digital first business, right? So right. As we know that the casino structure there is very different than it is over here in the U.S. It is what it is, but many mistakes were made. And many mistakes were made over, you know, probably 15 or 20 years. In our opinion, in a number of those things in England and in other European jurisdictions, the pendulum has swung too far back the other way, which it often does, right? So a regulatory pendulum or other, you know, a consumer perception pendulum, we know can swing back very strong the other way. I think we have an opportunity here to learn from that. We don't have to go as far as they did on one side or the other side. So if we did this right now, credit cards are clearly, what is a credit card, right? A bank most likely has determined that Roger or Omer are a good risk to give some money to. They feel comfortable giving me $10,000. And they let me spend that $10,000 the way I want to spend it. So I can go buy a new refrigerator or I can play some blackjack. But the bank feels comfortable that that's a good risk and they're going to make money on that and Omer's going to return that money. So that consumer independence is important as well, right? I mean, we're not here to tell consumers if it's something that is yours, you cannot do. That's, I think, the pendulum is swinging too far the wrong way. But there must be controls around it, right? If you're going to use a credit card, and it happens in casinos all day today, right? I take my credit card, I go to a casino cage, and I withdraw cash on my credit card. There's billions and billions of dollars of that activity that happens in brick-and-mortar casinos today of using a credit card. Yet there's this perception that as soon as I want to do the same credit card transaction for something that's a digital transaction with a casino, that's really bad. Well, so there's an incongruent stance. Those two don't make sense together. So, you know, we think there's lessons to be learned, and there's a balance to be had where credit can be used under controlled circumstances.
iGamingPlayer.com was one of the first fully licensed affiliates in the New Jersey market. Through partnerships with all the major online casino, poker, and sports betting websites, iGamingPlayer has become one of the most trusted places where players visit before deciding where to gamble online. iGamingPlayer offers reviews of the online gaming sites, advice about how to play the games, odds and opinions on sports betting, and much more. Soon to be licensed in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Michigan, iGamingPlayer.com can make the difference between success and failure for new online casino, poker, or sports betting websites. For information on how to work with iGamingPlayer, visit iGamingPlayer.com. Now back to our podcast. Okay. So let's walk through a possibility of a casino that decides to go completely cashless. What are the steps they would have to implement and teach their players how to walk through it themselves?
So that's an excellent question. So there's a real business infrastructure component to it, and then there's a business to consumer component to it. So let's take that first piece first. We have been, especially, I mean, I'd say in the last month or so, have literally been dozens and dozens of gaming operators, and we've created a kind of a tier categorization system of casinos that are either completely ready, somewhat ready, or not ready. And based on our analysis right now, we believe that roughly 70% of the casinos in the country are in Tier 1 or in Tier 2. So Tier 1 for us is probably 40 to 50% of the casinos, and those are operators that probably need no CapEx at all in order to move forward, and have, for the most part, have whatever software is needed. So there is a big part of the industry that has been making infrastructure upgrades, like high-speed floors and the slot floor and other such items over the last few years. And the Tier 2 category is, you know, call it, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30% of the market. That Tier 2 category are folks that need to spend some money. Mostly that money is going to be spent with their slot system companies, and, you know, these companies don't, and that doesn't mean buying new slot hardware, but there's probably other hardware that they need to upgrade on their slot floor. Maybe they need to upgrade some technology on the table game side in order to do that. So there's some CapEx involved, and we recognize that at this time it's going to be, you know, CapEx is going to be a challenge for gaming operators. And so, you know, that's kind of Tier 2. And there is a segment in that Tier 3. We think it's 20 to 30% of the industry is Tier 3, where, you know, it will take them a couple of years. There's going to be a long tail. There are operators that have not made investments in technology, that don't have high-speed floors, and that would have significant CapEx requirements before they can actually get there. And so there is that component, right? Not everyone is ready, and not everyone is ready right now. And that's going to take a little bit of time. And then from a consumer standpoint, right, there is a consumer education standpoint. Now, here's the good news. And we know, you know, this is all public information based on age demographic. You know, the entire country uses smartphones now. And most of us know how to use electronic payments. And all we're really doing, and many of us have some kind of loyalty accounts with some company, whether it's a gaming company or an airline or a hotel company. That's all we're really doing. We're taking existing technologies of loyalty, of electronic payments, and mobile technology, and combining the three together and putting them into an ecosystem that works in a gaming operator. So from a consumer education standpoint, while there is some education, it's not such a lift like people don't know how to use smartphones,
sure,
or are not comfortable with Face ID, so on and so forth. And so those are kind of the two things that are happening concurrently.
Okay. So essentially, you may be able to one day walk up to a slot machine, wave your smartphone in front of the reader, and deposit money into the machine itself.
That's exactly right. And the one day is not that far away. I mean, we would expect, you know, based on what we're hearing, we expect probably to be maybe up to a dozen casino operators running pilots in multiple jurisdictions. Over some future state coming, 2 years down the road to the industry. And you know how our industry works, right? If it works in three or four or five jurisdictions in a half dozen locations, that then is going to get replicated quickly across many jurisdictions, not dissimilar to what we saw with Tito. You know, once Tito opened up, you know, that advancement of going from zero to about a 90% conversion in the industry was 7 years. And we might see it happen even quicker this time around.
Mm-hmm. Just because there's a familiarity with the smartphone method.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, we're not teaching people how to use smartphones.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about another phenomenon, which is really increased because of this current situation, which is iGaming. You know, New Jersey just reported $62 million won by the online casinos in March. I'm anxious to see what the April is. March, of course, was only half shut down. How would this technology be able to work seamlessly between the online and the land-based casinos?
Yeah, and that's the real beauty of it, right? This is where the expertise of payments comes in, of omnichannel payments, And listen, I mean, the networks have been great in this. The Visas, the MasterCards, they're close partners. They're all working together on this to figure out how it's going to work. But the reality is, so online is, and New Jersey's numbers prove it, right? And Pennsylvania's numbers. The online and the digital space is here to stay. But for the patron, it needs to be seamless. So let's just say, I'm just using this purely as an example. But if I'm a customer that is an MGM customer or a 7-0 Hard Draw customer, it doesn't matter, Golden Nugget customer, and I'm playing online or in some digital ecosystem, and whether it's sports or it's online gaming, and I've got $400 in my account, I now want to be able to walk into that property and tap my phone and purchase credits in the slot machine, or vice versa, cash out money from the slot machine and go home on a Sunday afternoon and place an NFL wager. So that's the ecosystem from a patron standpoint, and that's what makes it so appealing. And the way payments work is that plumbing is already being laid. So the lift now of incrementally taking New Jersey or Pennsylvania or other states that add online and creating that seamless infrastructure is in fact not that challenging.
Right. I mean, it's all coming from the same account, so it doesn't really matter where you're accessing it from.
That's correct. Once you're in that mobile ecosystem for that Golden Nugget or MGM or whoever that provider is, it's really all coming from the same account. Now, from a patron standpoint, again, there is going to be, what we've seen happen here in online and in mobile. We believe it's only going to accelerate. Consumers do want to play, but we also believe that brick and mortar experience is invaluable. People like social activities. We want to be with each other. We want to play blackjack with someone face to face. We want to have a drink in person. Zoom is great. Social distancing is fine. But at some point, life goes back to hopefully at least relatively close, if not exactly the way it used to be. It might take some time, but we're going to get there. As humans spent 70,000 years as social creatures, and we're going to go back to doing that again. So from an online standpoint, we do think it's going to grow. We know other states are looking at it. And from a sports standpoint, I mean, sports continues to be the kind of the tip of the spear there that is going to help to continue to drive the online. And I can tell you, I mean, obviously, April numbers are not public yet in New Jersey, but for us internally, we just closed our April saw the end of April take place. And April was a strong month. April was a strong month from a digital standpoint.
Sure. So I remember in the beginning of online gaming, there was a lot of reluctance of banks to participate in this, whether it be the smaller or the large banks for that matter. How much cooperation are you getting with them on this cashless effort?
It's changing, Roger. And we really appreciate obviously our partners at WorldPay and Joe Pano and the team have done a great job, and now the AGA is involved, and there's really deep discussions taking place with large issuing banks, but also with the networks, with Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. And not just from an ancillary high level, hey, this is an online-only thing, or this is a sports-only thing, but there's $250 billion worth of cash circulating in the U.S. gaming industry. How do we help digitize this? Now, if you look at the fundamental missions of Visa and MasterCard, the network, that's the mission. Right? I mean, their mission is to deliver electronic payments. So our mission's completely aligned there, but there's always been this disconcerted relationship between what happens at brick and mortar and what happens at online. So like the example I gave was, you can use a card to do a transaction in a brick and mortar, but you can do the same transaction online. Well, that doesn't make sense. But this omni-channel ecosystem that's coming changes that. So there have been more positive discussions taking place in the last few months with the network than I have ever seen before, and I think we're going to see a very good framework emerge from the networks here, between this year and early next year, which is going to be consistent, fair, and balanced for the entire U.S. gaming industry. Including state lotteries, for that matter, not just our commercial and tribal businesses.
Right, exactly. So the last thing we ever want to do when we implement something like this is make it worse for problem gamblers. And I know you guys have been working closely with the RGU organizations and things like that. How are you really kind of making sure that this system is going to be nothing's foolproof, I guess, but you know, we'll be able to keep out people with these kind of problems?
Yeah, we actually think more needs to be done. You know, I mean, there are great, dedicated, smart, intelligent resources in our industry that are focused on it. Unfortunately, there are other resources that are not as focused on it as they should be. So there are learnings from financial services that we believe should be applied to responsible and problem gaming, especially in a digital ecosystem. So I'll give you one example. It's a high-level example, but there's lots of data around this on how it works and why it works. And so visualization works. And if you bank with whoever you bank with, Citibank, Wells Fargo, whoever you bank with, the odds are that if you have a banking mobile app, in that mobile app, they now show you kind of, at least from a high level, a graph, a pie graph, or a chart, or something that shows you where you spend your money. So it shows you, hey, where you spend $400 for food, but you spend $900 in travel, whether that was up from last week or down from last week, or up from last month or down from last month. That's a very high-level visualization tool that I can see. It's kind of like what Apple started doing maybe a few years ago, where every week they will tell you how much you use your screen time and whether your screen time was up or down. And so I know that what my average is now. I've been tracking it for the last 18 months or whatever it is, and I try to keep it relatively balanced. And so those kinds of visualization tools for responsible gaming, we think are going to be critical in building that into the infrastructure. So if you're someone, who on average does $400 worth of activity every weekend, and we know that 80% of that takes place on a Sunday because you like football, well, deviations from that behavior we want to alert you to. So when you do 400, and maybe when you do 700. We're not saying don't do it, but we just show you a yellow. Hey, Omar, you're in the yellow. We're just letting you know you're no longer in the green. And when you go from 400 to 1200, hey, Omar, you're in the red, right? Obviously, if you think you really want to do something, you can still do it. So there's those kinds of tools that we know that work in other verticals that I think are important to build into the infrastructure of gaming that help patrons self-manage themselves in a much better way, as opposed to saying, I have no idea how much I played. Well, that's the position you don't want to be in, or how much I spent. And you right. want to give that data and let people make smart choices.
Sure. Well, the good thing about this is the complete transparency, which you don't often get when they bundle cash into a casino and dump it on a table.
That's exactly right. And then there's other components of this that, I mean, we know when you look at it from an anti-money laundering standpoint, when you look at it from a IRS standpoint, from a FinCEN, from this, which is the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network of the U.S. Treasury, from all those standpoints, digital matters. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, that if it's digital, you can understand what that pattern of activity is, especially for unscrupulous folks, and managing through that. There are other things that we all need to think through collectively. Cybersecurity becomes more important. Data privacy becomes more important. Data privacy from a responsible gaming standpoint becomes more important, especially if you start to think about how it works across state lines. And so those are all things that are industry level efforts. If it turns out that there's $250 billion of cash, 50% of that moves to electronic payments, and now that's another $125 billion in electronic payments. Are we going to be collectively as an industry a bigger target for groups that are unscrupulous, that want to hack us? The odds are that's the case, right? Hackers are always going to go where the money's at. So we need to have great cyber tools externally. We need to have better internal control procedures where we always talk about these hacks that take place, but they take place from the outside world. But there's a number of hacks that take place internally. Where you have a disgruntled employees and so on and so forth, and so better policies and procedures built around that, and so those are all things that we will have to evolve into. But again, there's learnings there, and there's a number of verticals that have gone through this transition, and we need to be working with third parties, the smart people that are around this, the KPMGs, the PwCs, and bring them into the fold to understand what are the cybersecurity threats, how do we mitigate against that. And so on and so forth.
Great. Well, thanks for the time, Omer. It was nice to talk to you and catch up on this. This is an exciting time, you know, when we get back for the industry to really kind of develop this. And I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you, Roger, so much. And as over the next few months, some of these operators go live, the thing that I would love to see happen is if you're sitting down with the operators and they're, you know, and talking to them about it, both in Nevada and in other jurisdictions, what worked, what didn't work, what failed, you know, what patrons liked, and if the industry really did move forward. So I think that'd be a very interesting follow up for a lot of folks.
Yeah, we'd love to get the first hand experience of those who've tried this out. So again, thanks for the time. We appreciate you joining us.
Enjoyed this week's podcast brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the affiliate marketing site players trust when deciding where to gamble online. For information on how your online or social casino, sportsbook, or poker room can get involved, visit iGamingPlayer.com. To learn more about cashless payments and payment processing in the gaming industry, visit GGBMagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at GGB News using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or Spotify today. And we'll see you next week on the podcast.